We're having another presentation on nitrous oxide emissions from fertilized fields. One of the differences that this is relative to the other talks that you've heard is that this is above the crop. It's not chambers on the ground, but actually above the ground. And so we're going to be talking a lot about how does that kind of a system work, and does it really, is it effective? And if I get the right thing, there it is. So this is a no-brainer. We want to cut nitrogen losses from applications, minimize cost to the farmer, maximize the use, and then, of course, from an ecological point of view, we also want to minimize our nitrous oxide losses and our ammonia losses to the atmosphere through volatilization. One of the problems with nitrous oxide when you're working with chambers is that if you're making a measurement every week, you don't know what happened the rest of the time. And so the goal of this project was to try to bring some continuity to the measurements, regularity, so to get a better idea of how the variability due to weather changes or field condition changes affect the nitrous oxide emissions. So our goal is to run a continuously measuring system to be able to measure that emissions. In reality, it never quite turns out to be continuous. To go step through the process, the components to our system, we do our gas measurements, whereas in the chambers you're measuring, syringing the gas, and you're measuring it through gas chromatographs. We're measuring it in the air. On the one hand, we're using air inlets like you see in the upper right, drawing in air. That air is going into a closed path laser that's measuring the water content and the nitrous oxide. Here's just the spectrum for that, the two absorption peaks. We're sampling about every 10 seconds on that. We calibrate every 6 to 8 hours in that system. And because it's a laser and it's a closed system, we can get 0.3 parts per billion in terms of minimum detection limit. So this is sort of our standard. We can get a very good measure of what the nitrous oxide situation is over the field. A little bit less accurate method is using a Fourier transform infrared spectrometer. So the spectrum you can see down here is sort of a typical spectrum for the spectrometer. Here's the spectrometer up here. The spectrometer is actually under this little tin thing here, and we've got a telescope that's sending the giving first a hot bar out to the 100 meter away retroreflector that's then reflecting back, and then we're doing the absorption from that spectrum or from the heat going out. This system takes a bit longer to take a measurement. We run 64 scans before we get an actual average value for the 100-meter integrated concentration. And we do that for 3 minutes. And the system, the FTIR, is going out to these reflectors out in the other side of the field across a number of fields. And so we're not only measuring continuously integrated over long paths, but we're also integrating, we're able to measure sequentially different treatments under the same weather conditions. So this system, the descriptions behind the FTIR analysis, which I'm not going to get into, is in Chung-Sen Lin's talk on Tuesday. You can go to that and hear some more details in terms of how this spectrum is actually analyzed. Now, as I said, it's a scanning system, and it's going across multiple treatments. And so this is sort of a typical configuration that we had over the past 3 years when we've been making measurements. Each one of these colors is a different treatment. These white lines represent the paths, the optical paths. So the scanning Fourier transform spectrometer is sitting right here in the middle, and it's measuring out in these directions as well as this direction right here. Now, to be able to determine the flux or the emission from the field, we need to know what the upwind condition is. So if we had winds, say, from these three directions indicated, we have to be able to measure that concentration before it hits the field. And so that's what inlet measurements that are made in various places on this field are is to measure that upwind condition that we then relate to the scanned FTIR spectrum. So there's our scanned spectra. Our laser is matched against the FTIR along one path right here through a synthetic line sample. So we essentially are measuring the FTIR open path and a closed path N2O measurement that has a high accuracy along this single path right here. And then the upwind conditions, as you can see here, indicated. Now, with this kind of system, if we don't have an upwind measurement, then we can't do a flux. And so that's going to be a limitation in wind directions possible. So, for instance, in the scheme we have here, where the red ones are the upwind conditions, winds coming from the north, we can't determine what the flux is because we don't know what it is above this point ahead of the... We have a concentration. The concentration, to convert it into a flux, you need to have wind or turbulence measurements, some measurement of the movement of the air. So we use a sonic anemometer, three-dimensional sonic anemometer on the site to get the statistics, wind statistics, for each half hour that we take measurements. And then those statistics, in combination with the concentration measurements made along each scan path, resulting in nine equations that would then all get simultaneously solved using a backward Lagrangian method, we can come up with what the flux is. So you can see, here is the sort of hypothetical line sample, and what the Lagrangian model, the stochastic model, is doing is it's saying, if I've got a particle of air, parcel of air, and let the turbulence statistics play with it back in time, that parcel of air hit the ground or left the ground at this point or this point or this point or this point. And then you can get a fraction of what fraction of the parcels of air that have left the area of interest have reached the point in which you're measuring the concentration. So we do a calculation every 30 minutes, primarily because the statistics for turbulence are best known in the 15 to 30 minute intervals, and estimating based on pre-application emissions, we have an error estimate somewhere around 1 microgram per meter squared per second. To take those measurements and actually make use of them, you have to qualify them. And so the white box is our qualifications. So we qualify our data. First of all, we have to have at least 20% of those touchdowns or those dots falling within the domain that we're interested in looking at the emissions. We have to have wind conditions and stability of the atmosphere such that we have confidence in the statistics of turbulence. And we also have to have confidence that the background calculation that the model predicts is in fact similar to the background condition that really happened. So when you take nine equations simultaneously solving over here, the background concentration actually is an unknown. And so it's comparing the unknown against the measured values for the upwind condition, to check to see whether that model is actually conforming itself well, or was there an odd measurement that was consequently messing all the emissions up. So we said we were doing multiple treatments, up to four treatments. Here's a list of the treatments. The focus of this talk really isn't about the details between the treatments, but basically we're putting 100 pounds or 200 pounds of nitrogen fall or spring on tilled or no-tilled fields. Let's see. Rex, you still here, Rex? How long have they been tilled? Or no-tilled, I mean. 5 years. Yeah, 5 years. So here was our first experiment, and I'm going to sort of step you through the years because we were working with the system to try to get a better handle on it. 2013, we had two. Here we were looking at a nitrification inhibitor. So the two different treatments are in the black and the red. The error bars are the error bars estimated based on the modeling effort. And the rainfall is indicated down here on the bottom. This one microgram per meter squared per second error is indicated here in the gray. So you can see, now here we have very discrete periods of time. We don't have measurements during a lot of the day, and that's because we were using a generator. So we had a propane generator out there, and that uses up a lot of power, and you can't leave it alone, and it dies, and then it comes back, and miserable life working with a propane generator. So the next year we got rid of the propane generator. 2014, we had four treatments here, and I just stacked them in two different plots here. And again, we won't need to worry too much about which one is which. But you can see the variability. We're getting much more regularity in a flux measurement for the half-hour intervals during the two-week period. But it's a two-week period. So we have an optical measurement. That means it has to be over the canopy. So once the canopy grows higher than the optical path, then we have no measurement. So that's another problem that we had to face. So, we decided, okay, we'll apply the nitrogen earlier, because once you hit the nitrogen, everything starts growing like crazy. So we applied the nitrogen earlier into the 2015. And so 2015, the two-week period stretched out to a month. But as it turned out, we chose a bad upwind direction. We had three upwind directions, and we chose a bad one for this year, so we have lots of holes in our data as a result of the lack of knowing what the upwind condition was for various hours of the day, various times of the week. But you can see we again are getting differences between treatments, but it's a little bit hard to see differences between treatments on a long period. And this is going to be just like you would have with a chamber, because you put a chamber in two different locations and you get two different fluxes. So there's issues about spatial heterogeneity that need to be dealt with. And there's the problem with our inlets. So if we combine the results, actually you start getting a story. So 2014 and 2015 combining. So we have application right there, and you can see in both ones, in both sets of treatments, we have a rise of emission associated with or directly after that treatment. We're going to look at that and look at the rise in emissions in the back side of the treatments, the longer time after the treatment, to see what we can actually learn using this continuous measurement. Now, one of the things that we've done now, we're making measurements over the canopy, so we're including turbulence. So therefore, if we think of the soil of having a resistance to gas transfer, that gas coming out of the soil is in a laminar layer directly over the soil. And so that's R2 here, and that laminar layer of air builds up in concentration, and as the wind comes and sweeps that out, then that gas, that mass is being removed from the surface. And that's what's unique about this kind of an approach, is that you're actually removing the air from the laminar layer that the chamber would be normally measuring. So we would expect that turbulence ought to be a factor here, and if we compare this to the measure of turbulence called the friction velocity, talking about the roughness of the flow, you can see that there's in four different treatments, you can't see the white one very well, but four different treatments, there is in fact a increase in flux from the field as a function of the increase in turbulence associated over the field. Oh, so I'll make one more comment, and that means that this turbulent factor is really a dominant factor, right? So that the amount of the resistance of the material coming out of the field is not the limiting factor. The limiting factor is the atmosphere pulling the stuff away from the surface. So going back to our treatments, and we look at that early period shortly after the treatment, and the difference between these has to do with the 200 or 100 pound per acres application. We can see that, in fact, there appears to be maybe nitrifying bacteria at the beginning of the treatment, or at the beginning of, or shortly after the treatment. It's already present in the field. And we could do likewise evaluations for other parts of the treatments, the time after the treatment, which is a bit questionable. We don't quite know what's going on, but there's some tendency to think that maybe, in fact, we're getting denitrifying bacteria being the dominant source of the rise in the emissions of nitrous oxide later after the treatment, after 2 weeks of the treatment. So it's possible to use this scanning system. It does have an integrating capability. It has noise because it's got turbulence, and it provides us the ability to look at time, look at the emissions over short periods of time on a continuous basis. We haven't worked out all the details in terms of what those continuous measurements are going to give us in terms of processes involved in the actual emissions from the field, but that's something continuing under development. And the last thing I want to make is that, so if we have this above ground system, what's the advantages? Well, it integrates. We're able to do multiple fields because we can scan and we can measure continuously. The downside, the limitations is, well, if you're scanning, that means you're not measuring it continuously for each treatment. You're having to assume that within a 30-minute period, things haven't changed from treatment one when you're measuring treatment four. And it's time-consuming and quite a bit of energy involved to be able to have the scanning systems. Of course, they're motors, so you've got a lot of power involved. The last thing is that just like any other almost every other micromet method, you can't do things during the night because the winds are too low. We don't know what the stability, what the turbulence is doing. The statistics for turbulence mean very little during the night. Consequently, we can't use this method to be able to come up with fluxes during the night. Thank you.
Do you have any side-by-side comparison with the chamber method and see how much accuracy you might have gained?
Yes, we do. We do. I haven't presented this. That will be presented in the future, but we're still sort of juggling with the numbers. So in rough terms, right, you looked at the plot of emissions was going up to about 10 micrograms per cubic meter per second, and the chambers are like one. So it's maybe a factor of eight or something like that for the average wind.
That would be good to see it compared to the
yeah.